Hi everyone, it's Miriam here from Next Step Integral. With my husband Stefan Martineau, I developed and now facilitate the online course called Parenting as a Spiritual Practice. And I'm delighted to welcome you to this call in which we're going to be discussing the three pillars of approaching parenting and really, for that matter, any relationship as a spiritual practice. In addition to discussing these three pillars, I'm also going to share a brief overview of our upcoming course, which is called Parenting as a Spiritual Practice, and it starts next week, October 23rd. It's an 8-week online course that will teach and support you in exploring how parenthood can really be a transformative vessel for, you know, evolving yourself, also your child, and then also the future, and doing that within a supportive and wonderful community of families from around the globe. And then I'll also keep some time at the end of the call for any questions you might have. To start, I'm going to invite us all to settle in. Take a few deep breaths all the way to your belly, your pelvis, your toes. And as you breathe in, imagine that you're gathering kindly, that you're gathering gently any tension, any contractions, any places in you that might feel tight, might feel dusty. So gather them up, invite them to release as you breathe out, so that you're scooping them up on your in-breath and you're releasing those places of contraction on your out-breath, like a little gentle spring cleaning, sweeping through your body a few times like that. And now here we are together, calling in from many places across North America and around the world. And let's just take a moment to acknowledge that, to feel into the space between us all, and to imagine the weave that we create as we sit together here, even if far apart, drawn by our shared interest in how we can bring more consciousness, how we can bring more integrity and ultimately, more love to one of the most important tasks on earth, which is that of raising and accompanying, of parenting a child. Now, some of you, many of you on this call are parents and others aren't, but all of us together make up part of that greater village within which every single child exists and grows up in. As adults, as a global collective that we form together, we all bear responsibility for every child, right? Really, they're all our children. And considering our shared future, caring well for all children is one of the most essential jobs. Okay, so let's dive in. To start, I want to offer a quick clarification on what I mean when I say spiritual practice, because that term gets used in a variety of ways. Basically, I mean everything that you are and everything that you do to keep growing up, to keep waking up, and to keep showing up more fully. So with greater integrity, care, and love, bringing your fullest self to any area of life. So that could be parenting, but it can also be gardening or teaching or relating or really anything that we do. How can you show up more fully? So parenting as spiritual practice, it's not a specific religious path or affiliated with any particular religion. When I'm speaking of spiritual practice in the context of parenting, I'm really talking about becoming more aware of the many facets that are present in parenting. And so that includes a whole spectrum. It includes becoming more aware of what goes on inside yourself, right? The intrapersonal awareness. And so that's also in the various dimensions of yourself. So your body, your mind, also your soul and spirit. And then it includes becoming aware of how your present choices, your present states, your present way of showing up is affected by your past, by your biography. Also what choices you're making in the present, right? Becoming aware of those so that you can make new ones if you choose to. And also where and how you're still unconscious and habit-driven. And then, of course, it also includes awareness of your child, of your children, and then all the dimensions present in them, And also an awareness of the interpersonal space, right? That space between you and your child. And then in addition to that, the larger systems and structures, the cultural norms that you're enfolded in and also affected by. So when you approach parenting as a spiritual practice, it means that you then bring together this expanding awareness with your willingness, with your commitment, so with actual choice making, so that you can bring that growing awareness and how it might change how you show up right into your daily life with your child, where it can then start to make a really big difference. And there's also a huge emphasis on practice, right? On the actual doing of it, on the implementation of consciousness. And with practice, also a huge emphasis on it being a journey, being a path. So to look at it like you're building muscles of ever greater love and clarity. And it's definitely not about perfect parenting when we talk about parenting as a spiritual practice. It's really about living into and engaging the full potential of parenthood. And now, obviously, that's a lot to be aware of. I'm aware of that. But don't worry. For one thing, awareness likes to grow, right? Awareness actually likes to expand. And then, as we're going to be talking about in this call, there are some real anchors, some pillars that can help us navigate the complex terrain of raising another human being. So on now to those three pillars that I want to talk about today, which are applicable to your life in general, really to all your relationships. And then in the context of this call, I'm going to especially unpack them in connection to parenting. And my hope and intention is that by understanding these three pillars, you will feel encouraged and supported in contributing your whole beautiful evolving self to a saner world. Another reason that I want to share these three pillars with you is because, I'll just take a few steps back here. As parents, as humans, we all, at least I'm pretty sure all of us, wish there were just a simple way, right? Just one method that's tried and true. It's guaranteed to get us the results that we hope for. And so whether that's, a fitness program or a healthy diet or an approach to dating, a supplement protocol, a book on parenting, a financial plan, really a qualified approach to anything, there's something in us that wants to say, just tell me what to do, promise it'll get me where I want to end up, and I will do it. Does that sound familiar at all? I know that I've often caught myself wishing that there was just a simple way to go about ensuring health in numerous areas of life. And my observation is that our ego minds want so very much to know, to be sure, to have the secured and guaranteed path and really outcome laid out for us. But then, as I'm sure you've noticed, life tends to have other plans, right? This earthly existence keeps derailing our for sures. It tends to throw curveballs our way and tends to, sidetrack our perfect plans and visions. And instead, life nudges and sometimes it forces, sometimes it coaxes, sometimes it calls, sometimes it even yells or whispers and basically pushes us to let go of these notions that there's just this one simple method that'll get us to where we want to go. So in my experience, life keeps pushing us to let go of this deeply ingrained notion that there's one way to do it right. And if I just know what that one way is, then everything's going to be okay. And of course, when it comes to parenting, right, this crazy, exquisite dance between ourself and our child, life tends to utterly derail any notion of anything being predictable or being known, being, certain and sure. And this isn't to say that many of the parenting books and the parenting methods, the parenting tips and parenting know-hows, the parenting experts, that they're not helpful. They really often are very helpful and they supply us with encouraging information and tips to try out and help us along the way. But in my experience, all of them will only go so far. They won't actually ever get you to that solid place that you so wish you could get to. And the reason is because it's impossible to provide the right response to the zillions of possible parenting moments, all the different dilemmas, disasters, the questions, and also the curveballs that you will undoubtedly encounter. There is no book that I'm aware of that could ever contain all the answers to all the situations that you're going to come across as you parent a child from newborn to adult. And you will undoubtedly come face to face with situations in which you're truly at loss, right? In which you really have no idea what to do or say. It's a humbling thing. The situations where you've tried all kinds of things and nothing seems to be working. And at the end of the day, you'll still be left wondering if you shouldn't have, if you couldn't have done it differently, right? Whatever that it is, any aspect of parenting you can think of. There's going to be times you won't know for sure if you should have protected your child more or challenged her more. Or you may still wonder if he needed more guidance or perhaps less. If she would have been better served had you trusted her more or had you directed her more. Or if he needed more comfort or more stimulus, more independence or more connection. There's so many moving parts when it comes to human beings accompanying other human beings through life. So when we're traversing the territory, when we're engaged in the actual doing of parenting, it's usually not this method or that method that's going to offer you a solid handrail that you can clutch onto. It's not like apply this or that technique that's going to give you that ultimate ground to stand on as you seek your way through the storms and also the sunny sky days of parenting. In my view, and based on over two decades of work and research in this field, it's the following three pillars that will guide you through onward and upward. And these pillars, in my experience, can provide you with an ease and a confidence, really through the stormy, the calm, and also simply the unknown weather, which happens often, right? As parents, we're often at that fairly uncomfortable edge of the unknown. So the first pillar that I'd like to share with you is insight. And insight is different than information. Insight means it's a deep and an accurate understanding of the true nature of something. Historically, the word actually comes from Middle English. So that's English that was spoken from about 1150 to 1500. Its original meaning is inner sight, wisdom, and mental vision. Basically, insight means that you really get something. So it's seeped beyond just your mind, and it seeped all the way to your heart and into your bones. Insight goes below the surface, and it looks behind the obvious. It's like insight reaches for the source of things, for the cause, for the roots, and for the motivational forces behind actions and behaviors. So insight as a pillar in parenting, it's always looking for underlying and overarching truths, those that will stand steady over time. They're real, they're solid, they're not bound to the flightiness of the latest parenting style or trend. And another reason that insight can really serve as a pillar is that you don't have to remember it. It's not something you have to memorize. It's information that has become a knowing, right? It's become part of you. It's an understanding that you then carry into each moment and into each relationship and into each parenting moment. So you can imagine how handy that is when it comes to parenting and you're often doing your work on the fly. So what does that actually look like in practice when it comes to parenting? Like, I'd like to give you maybe some examples of how insight can be an actual pillar when it comes to parenting, right? So as said, insight's looking at those deeper truths, those that remain steady no matter what. And once we get those, they can basically guide us, a bit like lighthouses. So I'm going to give you a couple examples connected with a practice recommendation and then also some mantras that I think can really help you in your parenting journey and that we'll then explore in depth in the 8-week online course, Parenting as a Spiritual Practice. So the first key insight that I'd like to share with you is that ultimately every child makes sense. That's it. Ultimately every child makes sense. And that it's then our job to learn their language as much as they're learning ours. So the way they act might not make any sense to us at all, right, from our perspective. But drawing from this insight, what if we assume that from their perspective, in their language, they actually do make sense? And what if instead of then reacting to their behaviors, we ask ourselves, what's really going on, right? We become inquisitive. We become deeply curious. And we do our best to put ourselves in their shoes again and again, from when they're infants to young children all the way to teenagers. And then, as we start gleaning the deeper layers of information, then from that place, we figure out how to respond. So let's make this a bit more concrete. Let's just imagine a scenario. So imagine your two-year-old kicking and screaming as you try to strap him into his car seat. And as we all know, that can be exasperating, to say the least. You obviously want your toddler to be safe on the roads. You also have things to do. You need to run errands in town. And the only way to get there and back with your young one is in his car seat. But then he's resisting hand and feet. He's shrieking, squirming, wriggling out of your grasp. And before you know it, he's back on the sidewalk, maybe running up the garden path. And so how on earth would this insight serve you now? The insight that ultimately every child makes sense and it's our job to figure out their sense making. How in this instance, let's just imagine, how in this instance could he be making sense in his own way? So let's just put our perspective, what we might be having as our own perspective, up. Imagine you're suspending it, putting it on a shelf for a moment and putting yourself behind his eyes. So take a deep breath and suspend your own subjective perspective, the one that totally gets the need for a car seat and getting the errands done ASAP. So just put that one to the side for the moment and imagine how he might be experiencing this situation. Perhaps he was just playing in the living room and was content with his toys, with his building blocks, or was he maybe enjoying toddling around freely? Was he loving the fresh air? Maybe getting excited about an adventure as you walk to the car? Generally, we can assume that toddlers love to move around freely, right? And then there you are, lifting him up, placing him in the car seat, and on top of that, strapping him in, and he can, you know, maybe move his legs a bit, wave his arms, and that's about it. And then in addition, from his perspective, he doesn't yet get how long it is when you say, sweetheart, it's just going to be a half-hour drive. So in his experience, that probably feels like forever. And if he does have even a sense of what half an hour of sitting still is, that would still be a really long time for his little body. And then if we keep putting ourselves behind his eyes, to top it all off, he is in a stage of development when he's discovering himself as a person separate from you. And it's a healthy stage. He's experimenting with this new discovery by using words and concepts such as me, mine, this is mine, saying no when you say yes, right? Saying yes, perhaps also when you say no. Generally finding out who he is through contrast and sometimes through opposition and really wanting to make his own decisions. And also coming across all the limitations. He's still a little person, so that could be frustrating for him. So when you place yourself in his world and really get how getting strapped into a car seat from his perspective feels, then you can start noticing how that might inform your response. And the answers to that are manifold, right? They'll depend on your kid, on you, on your experiences so far, on many things. But just taking his perspective into consideration. You know, perhaps you then move to empathize with him and to share how you really get that he doesn't want to go in the car seat and that you say that, you speak it to him. We all know that, right? Just feeling understood can make a huge difference. And remember, empathizing doesn't mean that you're giving in and it doesn't mean that you're agreeing to his perspective. It simply means you're fully considering it. And that you get it, you're letting it in. Like from a certain perspective, it makes sense to you and you're letting him know that. Another response after you empathize, you know, might be that you suggest that you run up and down the yard with him a few times, playing catch just to get some of the energy released before he needs to sit still. Or you get a little flexible around the time. You say, okay, we have 5 to 10 minutes where you can decide within that chunk of time when you get in the car, and you show him on an analog watch. You show him the minute hand, and you keep showing how the time's ticking, and it gives him a little bit of empowerment. Like, within that scope, he gets to choose when he gets in. What doesn't change, obviously, is that eventually he's got to get in. But it can be worth trying out things like that. Another idea is to have him explore the car seat in a completely unrelated moment, just to discover it, play with it, and basically have it become his own through trying it out. Maybe he can try and buckle himself in. So these are just some ideas, but the keys are to start the inquiry into his perspective from a place of not resisting as a first reaction in yourself. And it's more kind of like this gesture within yourself where you go, this is what's going on, right? You're not resisting it. You're just being with it, even if it's not what you'd want, but you're just being with it. And then you get curious how you can solve the problem rather than pushing your way through. And often then both end up miserable and exhausted, right? Parent and child. So this insight involves trusting that there is a solution. There's a way through. And it doesn't mean that you're going to back down and that you're not going to do your errands. And it doesn't mean that he's not going to get in the car seat. But what does change through this insight, through this attentiveness to how he's sense making, is the how, right? And perhaps a bit of flexibility in the timing. Maybe, like I said, by 5 to 10, 15 minutes. Connected with the insight that children make sense is the insight that when they feel heard and understood, that generally, in my experience, and this is both personal as a mother and, like I said, working with many, many families, children are actually quite reasonable. I cannot tell you how many times the simple gesture of getting down on my knees, taking a deep breath, making eye contact, not resisting the moment, right? There's a different energy when you don't resist the moment. And then uttering the words, it looks like you don't want to do this. And I need you to do this. What could we do about that? Like, what could be a solution? Do you perhaps have an idea? And even as young as 2, 3, 4, 5 year olds, that's often brought forth great resolutions. You know, ideas like, I could maybe get my teddy to come along and then that would be okay. I'd have my friend with me. Or, can we sing when we're in the car or tell funny stories? Right, who knows? The degree of solutions is far and wide. So you can let yourself be surprised there. I think it's always worth checking just to see if from that calm, collected place, new ways forward can be found together, where you're working as a team instead of against one another. Let me just think of another example, different age group. So imagine you've got your 14-year-old and she's distant and moody as she comes home from school. She barely maybe says hi and she just goes off to her room. And you, right, you may be feeling hurt, disappointed. Perhaps you would look forward to seeing her and catching up. Maybe you'd even taken the time to make tea and a snack to reconnect. And it might be harder to find out how she makes sense because she's shutting off deliberately, right? But try it. Like, think back to the days when you were 13, 14, 15, right? And especially as a mum, you can remember maybe those early teen years as a girl. Remember how what might strike you as a detail now, at the time, often really felt momentous. How like a small social interaction could completely throw you off and make you doubt everything about yourself. Or how overwhelmed you maybe felt at times when you had too much homework on your plate. Or I'm sure we can also all remember those moments, like nothing precise happened that you can place your finger on, but you just feel off, right? You just wanted to curl up and hide away for a bit. When we assume that they are making sense, then as we seek to gain insight, it really means asking the question over and over, what's really going on? It's like looking again behind the surface, looking into the background. How could my 14-year-old be making sense here? And it's the sincerity of the question that's really your guiding light. You don't have to know the answer. You might actually never fully know the answer. And you obviously also don't need to bombard other questions. That doesn't often go over very well with teenagers. But just holding it as an open inquiry within yourself. And then sometimes if the moment does feel right and your relationship with your teenager is solid enough, you can certainly ask what's really going on. And it's your tone, your general demeanor that's going to give away if you're actually sincerely curious or if you're coming at the question with some kind of hidden agenda. And, you know, perhaps she'll tell you, right? Perhaps she'll tell you that she felt left out over lunch break and the other girls went off without her, or that she feels like her crush is avoiding her, or she doesn't even know herself. She just feels weird. She feels tired. Again, simply offering empathy does wonders. Just offering your presence and your understanding. And then if she's ever open to exploring further or getting other perspectives on the matter, then you can certainly go there with her. But just to start with this insight and this trust that she does make sense. And so in general, once you have figured out what's really going on, or at least you've been able to be present with the inquiry, your response will often change, right? When we're just paying attention to the surface, to the obvious behaviors, we'll see our child, our teenager in a very limited light. We tend to react to behaviors, and those reactions come at us and come through us fast, right? We'll see the hitting or the rude silence, or the acting out or the shutting down. We'll see aggression or shyness or whatever the behavior might be. And we'll react to that and we'll be missing a whole underneath part, right? We'll be missing the why behind the behavior. And that why is often what evokes compassion and deeper understanding and patience in us. Our parenting can be so much more effective when we inquire further, right? And when we're then informed by how they make sense of the world. And so it allows us to bring together, both the greater patience, the compassion, the understanding, but still also remaining clear and firm on our expectations around being treated kindly, respectfully, getting to places on time, that kind of thing. So a practice that I suggest, which in a way we've already gone over here, it's connected with this insight, is basically just to regularly get behind the eyes of your child, to ask that question, what does the world look like from behind my child's eyes? And then to engage with them in full consideration of their perspective. So you're suspending your own perspective. You're looking at the world through their eyes, literally through their eye. And you're at least trying to feel the world through their hearts and sense the world through their bodies and try and understand the world through their minds. And for this, obviously, we have to use our imagination. And also sometimes our guessing, our intuition, possibly asking them questions, and then also gather information about developmental stages, especially how their cognitive, their emotional, and their relational development proceeds. And in that way, it's really an exciting time to be a parent. There is now so much great research at our fingertips that can help us understand more fully what children are experiencing at any phase in their life. So this practice of getting behind our children's eyes helps us slow down, learn from how they make sense of the world, and then parent from a place of deeper listening and respect. And a simple mantra to help you work with this insight that children ultimately make sense is the following, and it's get curious before you get furious. So maybe keep that one in mind if you feel like it. When you meet an obstacle, an impasse, a challenge, a situation when you don't know what to do, simply inquire further rather than react and remain willing to bear standing at the edge of the unknown, right? Trusting that clarity will emerge as long as you commit to residing in that grounded, centered, attentive place within yourself. There's always going to be situations you don't know what to do, you don't know how to respond, but hold on to this as an anchor practice, which is simply to inquire into their sense making. I'll offer a second insight for this pillar that we're discussing here. And it's, I want to mention it just because it's such a key one, and it's that everything depends on connection. So all your parenting, every single parenting instance is based on and depends on the connection you have with your child. That's the insight. And it's key when it comes to humans in general. And in the case of parenting young, growing humans, it's definitely the case, right? We're all creatures of attachment, of connection. Whether we know it or not, we're all wired to attach and to connect. We all ultimately want to be accepted for who we are. We all want to be seen and heard and met. And all of us want to matter. We all want to be really welcomed into another one's presence. And, you know, sure, maybe some of us have shut this need down or completely shut it out, and we might be compensating through, you know, a certain degree of self-absorption, armored protection. But underneath that armor, there is still that deeply intrinsic human need to connect. And so it's really the relationship, I'm emphasizing here, ship, that you share with your child. It's that ship that carries every single interaction. And as parents, we often focus on the destination, right? So, for example, that our kids do their homework, that they brush their teeth, they answer our question, they help with chores, put their coat on, behave politely, do this and that. So we're focusing a lot on where they need to go, what they need to do. And in the midst of all this directing them, we sometimes forget that our parenting, and also how easeful it is or it isn't, that it all actually begins with whether the relationship is strong enough to make it to the destination together. Kids grow from an emotionally nourishing relationship. It's really, that's the foundation for their development. If you really get that insight, it's like you get the order of things right. So it means above all that you continuously invite your child to exist fully in your presence, and you let your children know through your words and actions that your love is unshakable and it's eternally unconditional. And that's the ground then upon which you teach and provide direction. And it's truly amazing how it works. Parenting becomes much more easeful. It's not necessarily less time intensive, but it comes more joyful. There's more ease. It's like once we're engaging our children's attachment instincts, the rest falls into a place, right? Our children are wired. We're all, for that matter, we're all wired to listen to and want to do good by those to whom we are attached. It's the same like if you go to work and your boss right away tells you what to do, you would respond differently than if your boss first says, "Hi, good morning, how are you doing?" and then says, "Oh, would you mind this doing this and this task?" It's very different, right? When you first have the connection and then you're directed. Same with our kids. When we forget that, it's like we're putting the horse in front of... No, we're not putting the horse in front of the cart. We're putting the cart in front of the horse. So how do you connect? It's quite simple. First, you just make it a priority. You understand that it's the ground, right? It's the first layer. And you don't take it for granted, especially as your kids grow older and get busier out in the world. So you can think of the relationship that you share with your child like a plant, and it requires daily watering and tending. So that can be a moment here, a moment there, of quality connection, of eye contact, checking in, maybe touching their shoulder as you walk by, having a tea together, turning your phone off when they enter the room, eating together, working on a project together, basically a string of moments and longer chunks, but making it a focus, making it a priority, remembering all your parenting hinges on the quality of your connection. And so it really means making it the foundation. And I'm reminded actually in this context, let me just share this, of one of my favorite poets, Emily Dickinson, who says, "Forever is composed of nows." So you can think of that. It's like the solidity of the relationship with your child, that forever, that feeling that it's there, that it's solid, it's composed of many, many nows. And little things matter, right? In our 8-week course, we're going to spend a whole week going into depth on this topic of the we, which is what I call that space, that we space between you and your child. So we'll really be looking in depth at how you can take this insight and make it a true pillar in your parenting. The practice here is to nourish the connection, right? To make it a priority. And the mantra that I'd like to offer you in this context is, I connect before I direct, right? Just to always place connection first before direction. Okay, on to the second pillar to guide you through the journey of parenting, and that is discernment. And discernment's quite closely linked with insight, right? We often gain insight through discerning, and we also discern through insight. Without discernment, we're basically just guessing. And I use the term here not in the sense of judging, but rather discernment meaning clear seeing, like seeing what is. Discernment hinges on your perception, on your awareness, and it's a skill that you can learn. You can actually get better and better at discerning clearly. What it takes is it takes a real commitment to the real. It takes a commitment to look beyond your desires, beyond what you wish were the case, what you wish to see. And instead, it's like you're committed to peeling away the veils of your projections, of your hopes, of your preferred outcomes, of the shoulds, the shouldn'ts, and the beliefs that, you know, you might be sticking on top of reality. And instead, taking a long, loving look at the real, like looking at what is and just that. So when we look at this pillar, discernment, in the context of parenting, I'd like to share with you an essential discernment to engage your parenting as spiritual practice. There's obviously many other discernments that are really helpful, but I kind of want to dive right to the key one. And that is the discernment of knowing who you truly are and also who you are not, and then also knowing who your child truly is and who he, she is not. So let's unpack this more. It means making a distinction between your true self, your essence, your essential self, and the self that you construct over the course of your life, your personality, your ego self, sometimes also called your representational self. Making a distinction between those two is key to learn how to not take things personally and how to respond in life, in parenting, rather than react. And this discernment also helps you meet your child more completely, because your child is both a human being and a human becoming. So I'm going to explain this a bit more. On the one hand, our children are becoming, right? They're little people in the making. They still have lots to learn. And for that, they need our guidance. They need our protection, our instruction, our feedback, and also our non-reactive discipline. And then on the other hand, they are human beings. They're already whole, right? There's an aspect to each child that doesn't need to get developed or constructed. It's actually already complete and sovereign. So you can think of this whole aspect of them as their soul, or often I'll call it their soul self versus their ego self, which is the constructed piece. And it's only when we bring these two partial views together of the human being, the human becoming, that we really start meeting our child more completely, and that we fulfill their deep human need and this deep yearning to be seen and heard and to be met no matter how young they are, right? To be met with respect and dignity every step of the way. And also to participate in this life on earth, no matter how little or young they might be, as is age and stage appropriate. Basically, this discernment encourages us to see and interact with our children as whole, evolving persons. And when we do this, we're bringing together a spiritual perspective, right? Where we're viewing and interacting with our children as a soul. We're bringing it together with the psychological developmental understanding of childhood, where we see our children as maturing. They're on a journey. They're journeying to becoming adults. And with that more complete view, we can then tend to the twofold task of integral parenting, wholesome parenting, by on the one hand helping them build a pleasant, well-functioning ego, right? Having a healthy ego is actually an important part of becoming human. And then on the other hand, also recognizing and being present to their true self, in that essence, so that they can stay in touch all the way up with who they really are from when they're an infant to an adult, and that they can do that in an experiential way. Because for kids, it doesn't necessarily register cognitively, but it's like when they are allowed to be who they truly are, it's more an experience that's encouraged in them. So you're doing both. You're showing them how to build a pleasant, well-functioning ego by, you know, both accommodating them, right? Making space for their needs and hopes and wants, but also by challenging them to adapt to the world and not be afraid of frustration, right? Knowing that that is also the way to evolution. And in general, you help them build a healthy ego by teaching and showing them also how to navigate the heavier trappings of the ego self, which can come in as soon as we realize we're separate, right, from others. We can also feel fear, limitation, drama. So what you're trying to do is help them wear the ego like a kind of like a useful lightweight coat instead of this clunky, heavy protective armor. And you also remind them that their ego self is just that. It's just a handy coat. It's not who they actually are. So we'll go into depth in this in the 8-week course of how you can actually do that. To help them stay in touch experientially with who they really are, in my experience, the most direct way to do that is actually just to drop into your true self, yourself, right? So don't try so hard to be someone. Instead, you know, be who you are and be sincerely curious about who they truly are. And, you know, we all know sometimes just dropping into our real self, it just happens in a moment of grace when we're feeling fully alive, when we're engaged in something we love, when we forget our self-concern. And to become reliable, consistent, right, to be living from that inner home, it does take practice. But again, this discernment helps us treat our children with respect, dignity, and integrity no matter their age, no matter the situation, because you're seeing them as in part as whole, right, as a soul. But it also helps you to stay confident in being in charge, being the one who's guiding them, instructing them, directing them, and disciplining them, because you also know that they are human becomings. There's many other consequences that come from this more complete view of who your child is, and we will explore those then in the 8-week course. We don't have time for all that just in 1 hour. When we make use of that discernment in ourselves as parents, when we know the difference between our true self and our constructed ego self, then we can engage this ongoing practice of paying attention to where we're coming from in each moment as we're parenting our child. And the difference is massive. When I'm residing in my true self, in who I truly am, I don't take things personally, right? When I'm centered in my authentic self, in my inner home, I respond rather than do that unconscious knee-jerk reaction to my child. And so what happens is when I'm resting in my true self, I basically become trustworthy. I can trust myself with my child. When I'm reactive, the best I can do if I hold this as a practice is to contain, right? Not to suppress, that's different, but to contain and then work on transforming the habitual, often semi or completely unconscious, bubbling up knee-jerk reactions. And the work there is to grow in awareness, to pause, to take a deep breath, and then shift over to the state where you're coming from, your real self, and make a new choice. Listen for what arises from that centered state. And that commitment to showing up in that way, I think, is one of the most potent and one of the most transformative gestures we can make towards building a trusting, healthy relationship with our children. Because every time we respond rather than react with our kids, what happens is we're allowing them to have their own experiences, right? When we're reacting, instead of them just having their own experiences, you know, what they're experiencing is getting colored and confused, literally, by our reactions to their reactions. We're then just adding a layer of drama. It reminds me of a moment when my daughter was flustered and then I was losing my patience too. And she looked at me and she expressed it so beautifully. She said, "Mom, you can't be frazzled too. I need you to be calm for me." And that's really it right there, right? We as parents need to learn how to regulate, how to calm our nervous systems so that our children can then borrow that regulation for themselves. So a suggested practice related to this discernment in regard to your child is really to see your child for who she really is, for who he really is. So to connect soul to soul and to do this on a daily basis. And I'll share some ideas with you on how you can do that in our course. A suggested practice around this discernment for you as a parent is what I just mentioned, is to pay attention to where you're coming from within yourself in any given moment. And just start with that. Just start paying attention. Just get curious. And if you find yourself coming from that more contracted, reactive place, then do whatever it takes to shift into your deeper self. And again, I'll share many ideas on that in the course. A quick one for now is just focus on breathing, right? Breath sounds so simple, is radical. It connects your mind with your body and it gives your nervous system the message that it's safe and it can help you regulate your whole system. So this kind of discernment can give you that firm ground I was talking about, where you can then stand upon throughout the adventure, the ups and downs, the unknowns of parenting, right? You don't then need to memorize what you're going to say or do in a given moment. You literally just pay attention to where you're coming from, and then you shift when necessary back to your true self. And then what you do is you listen for the response that arises from there. And that's where the magic really happens. Now on to the third and final pillar, which is embodiment. So we've had insight as the first pillar, discernment as the second, and now embodiment as the third. And basically, embodiment means putting what you know into action, right? Moving from theory to actually living what you gain as insight and as discernment. So in other words, it means walking the talk. And I think we all know this, that when it comes to parenting, it really comes down to the actual doing, right? The hands-on engagement. That's what's going to make the actual difference for our kids and in ourselves. Our children don't really care so much how many parenting books we've read. They care about how you show up, how I show up in daily life. So in short, embodiment means lots of practice. It means the practice of learning to stand calm and steady and to keep breathing even when your heart is cracked open, and to keep breathing when a knee-jerk reaction is about to burst out of you. It means the practice of self-awareness, right? All that work of getting to know yourself. The more you know yourself, the more you can show up as trustworthy. So it's to get to know your tendencies, your type, your strengths and growing edges, also your shadows and your soul. And it's also the practice of continually inviting yourself into a fuller sense of belonging. To really take it in, you are not alone, you belong, you matter, you're loved. So receiving that fully and living from that knowing, that also changes your parenting if you make that a practice. It includes the practice of presence, right? Of slowing down and being there for your child. The practice of listening connects with that first pillar insight of that your kids make sense. It's the practice of listening between, beneath, and beyond the words. And also listening for the emergent response, right? Not memorizing what the parenting book said, but listening for what is true in that moment. It's the practice of trusting your innate silent voice that knows because it loves. And really, that's your voice, right? No one else loves your child the way you do. It's that voice that's there when everything else becomes quiet. It's also, this pillar of embodiment is also the practice of forgiveness, right? To yourself, your child, for being human, because we're all going to mess up. That's just the way it goes. Also the practice of choice, of thinking outside of that hand-me-down box, thinking outside the box and being brave and creative so that you can discover and live what matters most to you and your child, so that you can stand up for what's true for you and for your family. It also includes the practice of releasing attachment, right? We talked about that earlier, the attachment to your own subjective perspective and looking behind your child's eyes over and over. And the practice of meeting and engaging with your child as a sovereign person while guiding and parenting him. The practice of making love bigger than whatever else might be happening. So I'm just kind of piling them in here. So you can, I'm hoping that you can get a lot of value from this call. Of course, each of these practices takes a lot of unpacking. So that's where we can go with the 8-week journey. Also, the practice of including and transcending your ego. So, you know, gradually, consciously coming home to your true self and also enabling your child to live and flourish in his, in her true self. And finally, and importantly, this pillar of embodiment really speaks to the practice of practice, right? It's so easy to trip up on, oh no, I'm never going to be the perfect parent and now I'm going to be so stressed about that. The pillar of embodiment is really a pillar of being on a journey. And it's about evolving rather than aiming for the unattainable perfect. It's about striving for consciousness. So you are lifting the ceiling. You're lifting the standard of, you know, how you can show up with more grace and integrity and love. But you're also enveloping those efforts with huge, generous doses of kindness and humor and forgiveness. So it's about taking one step at a time. And to really get to the simplicity that I'm pointing to here on the other side of the complex territory that's life, that's parenting, what we need to get a hang of, and I know this can sometimes sound elusive, but I also know it's possible and it's really essential, is that we get a hang of how to relax in the middle of the unknown, right? When there's plenty of chaos, when there's a multitude of possibilities, to relax, to be centered in the eye of the storm, that is the spiritual practice. And that is the way forward to dancing at the edge of the unknown and then coming through with your heart and your child's heart intact. You know, perhaps a little frayed, but overall good and solid. So remember, your parenting ultimately flows from your being, right? And then that informs your doing. And as you become comfortable with living at that edge of the unknown, right, finding that calm confidence within yourself, while life keeps on whirling and spiraling in and around you, you will be learning how to dance in the rain. It's that quote I love so much. You'll learn how to dance in the rain instead of waiting for the storm to pass. And in that way, you're going to become weatherproof as a parent. So those three pillars, insight, discernment, and embodiment, can serve like lighthouses to guide you then. And the mantra for this pillar of embodiment is, I'm on a journey, I'm practicing. It's that simple. So it's really, it means I'm going to keep stretching and growing. I'm going to keep seeking out my growing edge. I'm willing to keep growing up and waking up. And I will keep offering myself kindness, compassion, forgiveness as I go. And I'm going to offer the same to my child, who is also practicing. We're all practicing becoming human. And I will also offer that to my partner, and to all living beings, seeing each and every one as human beings and human becomings. And as we conclude this part of the call, it's important to remember you don't have to walk this journey alone. There are many, many parents who care deeply about bringing more consciousness to their parenting, to their relating. And it's one of the greatest joys of offering our 8-week online course, because it really brings together families, parents, caregivers, and anyone who makes up the village that we raise our children in. So that's also people who are simply curious about conscious relating, because we can use these teachings in any relationship. So that leads me to the next part of this call. And I just want to offer you a real short overview of the course that we're offering, Parenting as a Spiritual Practice, in case you'd like to deepen this exploration and join me and others. The course itself is like a journey. Every week builds on the one before. And in week one, it's an introduction to this whole idea of parenting as a spiritual practice. So getting a sense of what does that actually mean for us as a community, for us individually. It's also a time to get to know one another and a time where we're setting our intentions. So it's like a warming up week. And then in week two, we're looking at the context within which our parenting happens. So that involves looking at the values and worldviews that you bring to your parenting. It means that you look at your biography, your lineage, what new choices you may want to make, you know, releasing some of the past. And also it looks at how an integral evolutionary context can really allow parenting to become a potent vehicle for your spiritual growth and for compassion in action as it relates to your child. In week three, we're focusing on the we, right? one of those insights we spoke about today, which is that relationship, that we space that you share with your child, and that connection that every single parenting moment rests upon. And we're going to look at ways that you can nourish that connection. And you're also going to learn about the development of attachment and also about conscious discipline. So especially discipline that doesn't threaten your relationship with your child. In week 4, our focus is on your child, right? Your unique child. So you're going to learn how you can meet your child more fully and help her grow into their innate potential. So I'm going to share 6 core practices in this week that will help you understand and appreciate and respond to your particular child or children more fully. Then in week 5, we're exploring the interface between your child and the world at large. So how can you introduce your child to the world so that he's well equipped to deal with both life's joys and challenges? And also so that as he becomes introduced to the world, he, she is neither overwhelmed nor understimulated, right? As they learn to engage with the world. And I'm going to share 3 key roles that we play as parents at that interface between our children and the world. And especially in this day and age, the age of the internet, it's such an important question where the world just wants to come rushing in and crashing through the walls of our homes and our sanctuaries. So how can we ensure a safe and joyful discovery of the world for our children? In week 6, we turn our focus towards I, the parent, right? So much of parenting as a spiritual practice really hinges on our self-awareness, on our ability to regulate and to practice as a parent. So I will be offering insights and skills and core practices and basically, a comprehensive toolkit so that you can get to know yourself better and that you can bring your growing up and waking up right into your daily life and benefit yourself and your child's journey by doing so. Then in week 7, we explore the culture that you co-create with your family, right? Each child really presents an opportunity to renew, to recreate culture. And so we'll be looking at how you can bring consciousness to all the things that are being passed on to you at that cultural level. So it's bringing discernment, right? That second pillar. And looking at everything that was passed to you and choosing, are you going to bring it along or are you going to transform it or are you going to let it go? And we'll also be exploring the freedom to come up with new traditions and rituals that really make your family life more fulfilling and meaningful. And then in the final week, I will accompany you in weaving all the threads of the course together. Because really, at the end, I want you to have this handy, very practical way forward so that you can bring everything you've learned into your daily life with your child, with your children, and with your loved ones. And it is my absolute joy and honor to accompany parents and caregivers in this way. It's, on a personal note, I really look forward to sharing the perspectives, the practices, and the ways that my husband Stefan and I have discovered and experimented with and refined over time in our own attempts to make parenting our spiritual practice. So really understanding that we too are on a journey, so we come alongside you here. Our approach has been tried and tested most intimately and most extensively in raising our own daughter. And then I've also had the honor of accompanying many families in their respective journeys with what is laid out in this course. And so I've done that in seminars, workshops, and then ongoing in my counseling practice and my parent coaching work. And, based on my studies and also especially my hands-on experience and observation, I can wholeheartedly say this approach works. And it does require a lot of you. It will stretch you, it will challenge you, and it's so worth it, right? You'll be raising and accompanying your whole child, body, mind, soul, spirit, and you'll be doing the same to yourself. And that's the beautiful thing about parenting as a spiritual practice. It's really to get to know both yourself and your child better. It's both of you are interwoven in this effort. And overall, life truly does become richer and deeper and grows in meaning. And it's important to remember it's all going to remain an experiment. We're incredibly complex human beings, made up by so many facets and influenced by so much. So it's really an approach to parenting that's exciting and it's dynamic and it's demanding. It really keeps us on our toes. And we're never done, right? There's always more to learn and more to understand, and especially more to embody. So I will send you all a recording of this call and also a link with which you can find out more about the course and also register for it. I'd be absolutely thrilled if some of you decide to join. And now I'm going to look at some questions that have come in during this call. Now, some of you asked similar ones, so my team has put them together. I'll start with a common one that a number of you sent in, and it's, how much time do I need to put aside to do this course? Well, the short answer is, I'd say about an hour and a half to 3 hours per week. And the exact amount then depends on the week, because some weeks have more content, some a little less. And then it really depends on you, right? We've designed this course very specifically with parents in mind who have varying schedules, different needs, often not regular schedules. So everything is recorded and everything's downloadable. So you can always download things and save them to your personal files. And then you can revisit the course content from any week as needed. And you can also take the whole course at your own pace. So that's important for you to know. Each week is made up of a teaching session. So that's a session that is about 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes in a bit longer. Also a practice session, which is about a 10 to 15 minute long audio session. There's handouts and worksheets that accompany these sessions, and also journaling impulses. And then we have 2 live calls in which we all come together, and these are interactive. So you can share your insights, your comments, your experiences, your questions. And then I'm also available by email. So through the 8 weeks, I'm very committed to holding your hand. So you can also share questions or experiences through email, and I will take the time for those. Okay, on to another question, because our time is rolling right on here. So this one comes from Sally from the UK, and she asks, is this course relevant even if I'm not yet a parent? Beautiful question. So thank you, Sally, for writing in. And I say yes, absolutely. We've had many, many pregnant couples or individuals take the course. We've had aunties and uncles who know they won't have kids but really want to be more attentive and tuned into the kids in their lives. We've had people who are just starting to think about maybe becoming a family. We've had grandmothers and grandfathers. So, you know, the beauty of this approach where we're working based on the underlying and overarching truths is what we're working on in this course is material that both applies then to the myriad kinds of parenting situations you come across, but also it applies to any single relationship, right? The core practices and the skills and the teachings and perspectives you're going to learn, they apply to your relationship with yourself and to your partner, to your friends, to other people, and then, of course, your children, if you have some. So yes, I'd say totally relevant if you're curious and interested. Okay, we have time for a last question. Is this course useful even if I'm through the early stages of parenting? My son is now a teenager. And I would say yes, absolutely. We have had many parents of teenagers. It's interesting because the course content is in a way so universal. You know, there's things that we might suggest ideally you do when your child's young, but if you feel like, for example, let's take the example of connection, right? If you feel like that has become weakened or isn't as sturdy or is just a bit more wobbly than it used to be now that your kid has turned into a teenager, those practices then you can basically, you know, become re-inspired, reinvigorated, and have new ideas of how you can reconnect. And I remember specifically one mother, she was from Holland, and she, after that week around the Wii, she said basically her relationship with her, I think he was 16-year-old, completely changed simply by putting the relationship first again, the quality of connection and everything else after. So I would say yes, absolutely. And in closing, I just want to thank you all for joining me on this call. I want to thank you wholeheartedly for your interest in raising children who can then be more equipped and more ready to navigate the unfuture, which we all know is really more and more uncertain. It's in my view, it's one of the most important tasks at hand in this day and age. And it's really a transformative form of long-term activism and service to the greater whole, which is all of us, all of humanity and this planet that we're on. So I look forward to deepening the journey with those of you who choose to take the course. And I send each of you every blessing, my deep love and care for you and your families. I'd like to end with a prayer, and I invite you to join me. Just take a couple deep breaths. May we be the calm and generosity we want our children to be. May we be the courage and compassion we want our children to grow into. May we be the presence we wish to gift our children with. May our love for children crack us open and take us beyond ourselves. May we become the human beings our shared future needs our children to grow into. And may all children everywhere be held in great heart and in great love. Amen. So thank you again for joining the call, and I look forward to getting to know those of you who decide to join me in our 8-week course. And as said, I'll email you the link so that you can re-listen to this call if you want. You can share it with others, and I'll also send you the link for course registration in case you'd like to join me. So much love and be well.